Music from Prokofiev's Prodigal Son, a ballet our next guest starred in. Edward Villella has been called America's greatest male classical dancer. He would appear on Ed Sullivan, right up there with the Beatles. He helped make ballet popular. He joined Balanchine's New York City Ballet in 1957, likening Balanchine to Mozart and Shakespeare. And Mr. B, as he was called by his dancers, created some of his greatest ballets for Edward Villella. So did Jerome Robbins. Edward Villella started the Miami City Ballet in 1986 with a few dancers and a storefront. He led the company to international fame, and at the end of next season, he'll be retiring. What a wonderful time to speak with Edward Villella, who joins us from Miami. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. A pleasure.
How are you feeling about retirement?
Well, I'm not the retiring kind. I will depart from here, but that does not mean I will stop functioning in the art form that I adore and love.
And maybe teaching, too, because you've been praised as one of the few Balanchine dancers who has been able to pass on his spark and the one that keeps his ballets alive. And you've said that Balanchine dancers almost have an obligation to do that, to pass it on.
Yes, he was a brilliant, brilliant man, and he had wonderful, wonderful things to say to us, for instance, about passing ballets on. He said, you know, ballet is passed on body to body, but also mind to mind. It's a mind-driven physicality, and it's a very, very important part of my life to speak about my art form. As you know, it's a mute art form, and sometimes it's very, very helpful to be given some insights into what someone is going to see so they can begin to get a sense of the choreographer's intent.
Well, this isn't new, and perhaps this is the moment when I should confess my lifelong crush on you. I saw you at a young person's performance in New York. I think I was like four, and I think I wore my tutu to it, and from a very short-lived time with ballet. And you came out. I remember you came out, and you spoke, and you talked about what we were seeing. You were very approachable, and this was at a time when dancing was also, as we said, you know, on TV. And I'm just wondering how much you were a part of that, I don't know, accessibility of ballet. Born in Queens, a boxer in college, you call yourself a beer drinker in the champagne world of ballet.
Well, actually, the New York Times called me that. I come from a blue-collar area, blue-collar neighborhood, and family. And once I got involved, I was actually forced to get involved into ballet because my sister was doing it. I was not comfortable with it until I got to know the dimension of it. Being a very, very physical kid, I needed to move, but now I had structure, I had form, I had line, I had reason, I had dramatic thought and idea, musicality. Wow, this was a whole new world of movement to me.
Well, and then, you know, here's a kid from, as you said, Queens, also bumming up against George Balanchine. And you write in your 1992 autobiography, A Prodigal Son, Dancing for Balanchine in a World of Pain and Magic, which sort of tells us where we're going with this. You know, there were some struggles there. You didn't want to take his daily class. Sometimes there was problems over rehearsals. Yet you called him as your artistic father. So what was that tension there?
Well, the tension was probably because I hadn't danced for 4 years. When my sister quit dancing, my father said, okay, that's it, you're going to college. And I got sent to the New York State Maritime College at Fort Schuyler in the Bronx. I have a Bachelor of Science degree in Marine Transportation. I won my letters in baseball and was also welterweight boxing champion. But when I finished, I gave my degree to my father and I said, that's for you, but now I'm going to be a dancer. Of course, he didn't talk to me for a year. But at any rate, getting back to the Balanchine situation, he had a very, very complicated and very, very fast class, and it varied day in and day out, so you didn't really know what was coming at you. And because I hadn't danced for those 4 years, I was just getting my musculature back. And I had rushed at this, and really what I should have done was taken a year or two of training before I got into a major professional company, but I didn't. And it affected my muscle tone. I had terrible cramps and all of these things. And part of it, I thought, was due to the very, very quick, almost frenetic pace of the Balanchine classes. I could no longer take his class, and that became a very, very difficult circumstance between us. However, he never held that against me in terms of roles or things like that.
Well, whether Balanchine or Jerome Robbins, what was it like, you know, to be this physical specimen and the, you know, the leaps and the bounds when it was, as you said, magic? In your title, when it was the magic, what was that like, that having that physicality?
Oh, it was an amazing thing to be sitting in a chair and know that you could just get up and do all of these kind of things, wonderful physical feats. But the other part of it was performing. Wow, I loved class. But when that curtain went up, I couldn't wait to hit the stage. I didn't walk on a stage. I just burst onto a stage because I hadn't danced those 4 years, and now I suddenly had it back.
Well, and now you are shaping and molding and helping young dancers with their craft. There were tears when your retirement was announced. How do you send a ballet company off? As you said, you're not dusting your hands, but...
Well, let me put it another way. We have just returned from Paris, and I have never experienced or heard about a reception like that in my life. I danced an encore at the Bolshoi in 1962 during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and I received, after my variation, about 22 to 24 curtain calls, and they screamed and yelled and stamped their feet and called my name. And I thought, wow, this is the moment of my life. And then came Paris, and our closing night was extraordinary. We did 17 performances, 14 different ballets, and all to ovations, standing ovations, screaming ovations. It was unlike anything I've ever heard. I was doing interviews three, four, five a day, and the first thing they would ask me is, how did you do it? How did you do it? I replied, well, we respect the art form and we continue to investigate it. We came with masterwork that was done the way it was originally intended, and they hadn't really seen it approached that way. Plus, our dancers were unbelievable, sharp, quick, linear, musical, without trying to impress an audience. They just were who they were. They knew who they were on stage and provided it for the audience.
So you're leaving them healthy, is what you're saying.
I think I am.
That's Miami City Ballet founder and artistic director, and I might add, my crush when I was about four, Edward Villella, retiring at the end of the season. That would be next year. This month, he and his dancers can be seen in a Dance in America special on PBS. For more on that, go to hearnow.org. Edward Villella, can't wait to hear what you do next.
Thanks. What a pleasure to speak with you.